How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio. It is July 30, 2016, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. UFC 201 tonight, a lot of wrestling and mixed martial arts news. As of the time we're recording this, the G1 is going to be taking place later on tonight, I believe. Are you going to watch that show, Dave?
Yeah, as soon as we're done, I probably will watch the show, yeah.
There you go. Let's get into this UFC 201, because there's actually a lot of stories here on this show, not the least of which is somebody missed weight, and as a result, they're not getting paid anything, and their opponent got their show money and win money.
Well, that's because Justin Scoggins didn't fight.
That's right.
I mean, if you don't fight, you're not going to get paid. But he missed. He was going to miss badly.
He didn't even try. He didn't even weigh in.
Well, he was going to miss by 7 pounds, and so and they couldn't come to an agreement. You know, as far as his opponent agreeing to fight after missing weight that badly, so the fight ended up being scrapped. And you know, the opponent, Ian McCall. I mean, he had no. There was no reason that he should have. And I don't know what happened where you missed by that much. I mean, it's unless you're ill or something like that. Sometimes guys come close and their body shuts down. But things happen. I mean, but that's what happened there.
We have a brand new welterweight champion. Tyrone Woodley beat Robbie Lawler via knockout, 2 minutes and 12 seconds of the first round, the fastest finish in the history of the welterweight division.
Not the fastest, in the division, in the championship match.
That's right. Just decked him, just smashed him, followed it up with shots on the ground, and that was the end.
It was just a perfect punch, right? You know, Robbie Lawler can take a punch, but nobody was going to take that punch without being hurt. I mean, it was a great feint. Woodley faked a takedown, faked another shot, and just came over the top, nailed him right under the eye. And I mean, his eye swelled up immediately, or right under the eye swelled up immediately. And he was down, and he may have just been knocked so silly he couldn't react. But instead of trying to tie Tyron Woodley up, he tried to get up. And that's like a big cardinal mistake. So many times when a guy gets, your brain's not functioning or anything, but when you get hit in the head, you're decked like that, the thing that you should do is try to, when the guy comes, to the ground, you should try to immediately tie him up. But your reaction is, especially if you're not thinking, is to try to get up. But you're so woozy when you try to get up that you're just like a sitting duck. And I don't know if there's anything that Lawler could have done after this punch, honestly. But Woodley fired a couple of more punches, two of them were just devastating. I mean, it was, he got rocked bad, and it's, the whole night, I mean, it was just a crazy night. So many underdogs winning, and on the main card, every single underdog won, actually. And it's just a situation where anyone can beat anyone. You know,
let me ask you a question about that, because I'm not accusing Robbie Lawler of anything. He's just the guy that it happened to be tonight, that he was the seventh champion this year that has been dethroned. A year after the whole USADA testing kicked in, and it's not just champions being dethroned, but there have been a lot of upsets.
There have been more upsets than any other year. There's been 44% upsets coming into tonight. With tonight, it's probably I'd have to rework the percentages. It's probably 45-46% upsets, which is an incredible number. I mean, usually it's closer to the low, the low to mid 30s. So it's not like you're imagining things, or sometimes
no. But here's my question: so a couple of years ago, when we had that string of terrible injuries, and the question was, is this the new normal, or is this an aberration? It turned out it was somewhat of an aberration. It wasn't that bad the next year. I mean, is this rash? This 45% of upsets, is this USADA, or is it just this is a crazy year?
Both. It's not all USADA, but you absolutely cannot say that it's not part of it. A lot of it is that there's a lot of guys. There's no supermen in this business. I mean, like there were a few, but there really isn't now. I mean, there's a few, it's like if you put two guys, I think it has to do with good matchmaking or even matchmaking and less one-sided matchmaking, when you put two guys in the depth, the fighters are much better, although that, you know, that's the idea that they're much better from a year ago, that's probably not the case so much.
And hasn't there always been an attempt at even matchmaking?
Yeah, but I think the thing is now is that the depth of talent is so much that it really is even, whereas before, a lot of the even matchmaking might have been like 65% chance to win, and now even matchmaking is maybe 55%. So I think there's that. But you know, the thing is like you don't know who the favorites are because USADA's got everything all confused. You know, you don't know who was on. You don't know who's getting off and is then going to be subject to not being as good. I mean, there's always going to be like the Robbie Lawler-Tyron Woodley fight. That's not USADA. That's just a fact that somebody got clocked, and that would that happens with or
sure.
without.
Sure. I was just bringing that up because during that fight, they mentioned it was the seventh championship change in 2016.
Well, some of them probably are. But, you know, you got to also remember that a lot of the champions this year were very beatable champions. You don't have the George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva's in his prime and people like that. If you look at the guys, Verdum was getting old in the division. Verdum was getting old. Light heavyweight, obviously, we haven't had a change because John Jones wasn't able to fight. So Cormier's been champion. Then the next one would have been Bisping, which was just shit happens, right? That one's not USADA. That one's just shit happens. Rockhold was hurt. Maybe Rockhold was overconfident. He didn't, he'd beaten Bisping so easily the first time that he didn't respect him and he paid the price. This one here, it was what it was. It was just the punch landed. You know, that's really what it was. Eddie Alvarez and Dos Anjos, I think, was the same thing. I think it was just the punch landed. It could have gone the other way if Dos Anjos landed the punch. Featherweight, Connor hasn't even defended the title, so he hasn't been able to lose it. The bantamweight, of course, was Cruz. Cruz and Dillashaw was just a great fight. And, it went the distance. And it there was no fluke there. But it was a close fight that either guy could have won, but Cruz was just one step better than Dillashaw on that day. I mean, now, did Dillashaw look like a different guy? Yes, he did. Okay. And then Demetrius hasn't lost because he was supposed to fight tonight and didn't fight. And then on the women's side, you got, one champion, Ronda and Holly Holm. I mean, Holly Holm and Misha Tate was what it was. She just got, Holly Holm had the weakness on the ground, and Misha Tate was able to finally get it to the ground. And then Amanda Nunes just came out and clocked Misha. But Misha was always a very beatable champion. She was never going to be dominant. She just happened to be able to win, and she was tough. And if she'd gotten out of a couple of rounds with Nunes, she would have won, but she didn't. And then Joanna hasn't lost yet. So that's the story. But, if you look at, like, all of these different champions, I mean, Tyron Woodley can get beat. Stipe did lose to Stefan Struve, who's not even like a top-ranked contender. That was years ago. He also lost to Dos Anjos. So Stipe can be beat. Cormier. I mean, but anybody who fights Rumble Johnson can be beat. Rumble Johnson's got knockout power. And, I mean, even though Cormier beat Rumble Johnson in the first round the first time, if Rumble Johnson hits Cormier, before Cormier can get it turned into a wrestling match, I mean, that can go the other way. Like I said, Woodley's beatable. I think Wonderboy could beat him. He's obviously trying to – we've got to talk about it. So after the fight, after Woodley wins, Stephen Thompson is doing the analysis for the show on FS1, and Stephen Thompson just – goes to him and just goes, "It was a great performance, and I want a title shot." And he's absolutely deserving of a title shot. And Woodley turned him down flat and just said, "No, I want to fight Nick Diaz. I want the money fight. I want Nick Diaz, or I want Nick Diaz at UFC 202, which I don't see happening, given that's a couple of weeks away. I don't see that one. But he goes, I'm fine. I want Nick Diaz at 202. Nick Diaz is off suspension. I know he's been training. It's not going to happen that quick. Or he said he wants GSP in Madison Square Garden, which is a fight. Look, everybody wants GSP. I mean, that's a money fight. And you know, he said the right things. That's what he should say. He should want the money fight. And it's just one of those deals. Eddie Alvarez can get beat by any of the top contenders at lightweight. Not saying he will, but he absolutely, you know, those are all pick'em fights. Aldo and Connor, you know, I don't know. I mean, the first fight was what it was. Aldo looked awfully great in his last fight, though. So it's hard to, like, rule him out. Cruz, I don't know that Cruz and Demetrius, I'm not so sure that there's going to be people beating them. But who knows? I mean, they can still get hit in the face. So there you go.
On the subject of Ioana, the semi-main Carolina Kavalkevics against Rose Namajunas. Carolina won a split decision, 28-29, 29-28, and 29-28. So it will be Polish versus Polish in a championship match here. And the story of the fight really is, as I think you had pretty much predicted going in, nothing Carolina did in winning this fight gave me any confidence that she was going to beat Ioana.
Yeah. She did win the fight, though. I thought she won rounds 2 and 3. I thought it would have been, I'll tell you, as far as split decision and everything, I thought it would have been a real travesty had Rose won this fight. I just thought Carolina clearly should have won the fight. She just landed more. She had better Muay Thai. It's just, you know, it was actually similar to the Shevchenko and Holly Holm fight in a lot of ways. Just a better stand-up fighter. And it was a good fight. I mean, it was, you know, I got fight of the night. It wasn't my pick for fight of the night. Actually, I thought the opening fight was tremendous, but it was also a short fight. But the Damian Brown fight, you know, the Dana was talking about how they should put the fight in Poland, which actually makes all the sense in the world if they can put that together. You know, two Polish women, Polish power versus Polish power in Poland. That would probably, if it was in Poland, would probably end up being a Fight Pass show, perhaps an FS1 show. You can do an afternoon FS1 show. So that looks like the next step for them. But yeah, I mean, Carolina said that she felt that Ioana is the best fighter in the division, and she doesn't think she is the best fighter in the division, but she does think that she can beat Ioana. And Ioana has kind of said that she doesn't think that Carolina is on her level. And you know what? As a pure striking fight, I don't think she is. Ioana is such a great offensive fighter. She's not a great defensive fighter. So there is, but. I think that as the fight goes on, Carolina did not, you know, at no point did Carolina really have Rose in bad trouble. She just outpointed her. So if she doesn't have the knockout power and it's going to go to a points thing, I think in the later rounds, Ioana's really going to start putting those combinations together and that quickness and her technique, and it'll be tough. I mean, you know, put it this way, you never know because, I mean, All the fights tonight, like the Ryan Benoit fight and everything, I thought that could go either way. I knew that Lawler and Woodley could go either way because you've got two guys who could both finish. But there was a fight that I thought that there was no way that Matt Brown was losing to Jake Ellenberger, and he got waxed. So, I mean, the reality is that, you know, when you have two people who know how to fight in this sport, there is always a chance. So Jake Ellenberger was actually cut by UFC. But it was never announced because he went to Las Vegas and he just give me one more chance. So they gave him this chance here. And Matt Brown is a hard guy to finish and a tough guy. But you just get, I mean, he got dropped with the first punch. And Ellenberger does hit hard. But then the key blow was a liver kick. And it's like that, you know, every time you see that perfect liver kick, you're just paralyzed. There's just nothing you can do at that point. If you get that, you hit that right spot and he hit the spot and Matt Brown was just down and he was done. I mean, that was just a quick knockout. And I mean, I was freaking stunned by that. I just thought that Ellenberger looked, you know, washed up, for the last couple of years. I mean, he did some wins here and there. And
this was not like a flash knockout or something like that. I mean, he decked him at the beginning, and Matt Brown made a recovery, and he was doing all right. And I don't know if he got cocky, he thought the guy was too tired, but he had his hands down, and then he got the liver kick and got
it was the liver. The liver kick will do it to anyone if you land perfectly, and that's what happened. Once he got that, he was done. You know, you just can't. Your body stops responding at that point, so his body stopped. You know. I don't think that it was cocky or anything. I think it just happened. He got that, you know, the punch was a perfect punch. You know, maybe he was a little, you know, he was flat when he came out, and maybe he was overconfident and just thinking like, look, you know, I fought really top guys, and Ellenberger hasn't looked good in a while. And I almost thought this matchmaking was just okay. Ellenberger, you know, you think that you deserve one more shot. We're putting you in there with a tough guy, and that's going to be it for you. And, you know, you never know, because sometimes you see these guys, if they're not scared and they think they're better, they don't necessarily train as hard. Although, you know, Matt Brown claimed that he trained as hard as he ever had, and it was just what happened. But, yeah, just it is what happened, and, you know, Ellenberger prolonged his career. He'll probably get a – you know, realistically, he beat a top 10 guy. He's probably going to get another top 10 guy in his next fight. And there's a lot of them in that, you know. I mean, that's a tough division. There's a lot of talent there. So he's going to be in for a tough fight next time out.
Then we had an amazing deal in the next fight. Francisco Rivera and Eric Perez. In the third round, I guess they both decided to go out there and go crazy. Now, there's something about fighting where people love guys that have more courage than brains, which is what we had in this round right here, because instead of agreeing that if we make it to the end of this third round, we'll go crazy, they decided to go crazy right at the opening bell, and Eric Perez and Francisco Rivera went absolutely crazy, and then Rivera just was finished.
Oh, he was so exhausted when it was over.
Oh, my God. He fell. He literally was standing there and, like, threw something and just fell down because he was so exhausted. And he had nothing left for the rest of the round.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were both just came out and threw haymakers, and Perez dropped him with one. I mean, Rivera actually hurt Perez first, and then Perez kind of, like, I mean, he wasn't knocked down, but he was on the verge of being knocked down. But he stayed up. He was swinging wildly. Rivera was swinging wildly. Perez dropped him. And then Rivera got back up, and they started throwing again. And then Rivera threw this wild punch, missed, and fell down. And from there, you know, Perez jumped on him or took him down and pretty much dominated the rest of the round. Actually, I thought that the round was a 10-8 round. And actually, two or three judges did as well. He was going to win anyway, because I guess the judges had given Perez the first two rounds. I thought Rivera won the first, but, I mean, it could have gone either way. There's nothing negative about the judging on this show. I mean, there, you know, but, you know, like, Perez clearly won the third strong and won the fight.
And then in the opener, Ryan Benoit and Freddie Serrano. Story here is Benoit took the fight on 10 days' notice, and I guess he just kept going for... What happened was he kept going for guillotines and would get slammed over and over in the first round. And by about midway through the second round, Serrano was starting to get tired, and Benoit managed to win the round, win the third, and go on to win the split decision.
Yeah, I had Benoit winning rounds one and three, Serrano winning round two. Well, Serrano definitely won round two because he kept taking him down. Serrano is a Olympic level wrestler. I think he medaled in the Pan Am Games, but he's 36 and he's just starting his career. And he's one of these guys, like, you could see he's a great athlete. It was very clear he was a great wrestler, but as far as like a technical stand up fighter, he was not. I mean, he was just a guy who, when he stood up, you know, because he was athletic, would just like run around and throw crazy stuff. And there's a lot of crazy moves that you don't see in a normal fight in this fight. But most of them would be more sloppiness from the Serrano side than anything else. Benoit was a lot more composed, especially when it was standing. It would have been bad had Serrano got the decision, I think. But and he didn't. I mean, if Serrano, I think Serrano's one of these guys where you look at him and you go, if he came into the sport 10 years earlier when he was younger, and he probably could do a lot of damage, but it's just probably at 36 and you've only had three fights, this was his fourth pro fight. It's going to be really hard to play catch up when your stand up is that sloppy. And this, you know, Benoit was not a top level flyweight by any means. So, you know, I mean, it's just what it was.
All righty, take us through the undercard.
Yeah. So the first fight was tremendous. It was Damian Brown and Cesar Arzamendia. And Arzamendia was coming out. He was landing knees, and he landed a right. Then Brown dropped him with a great punch to the jaw and almost had him finished. Arzamendia then went, as he was getting pounded, he moved into a heel hook, and Brown did get out of it. Then they were trading punches, and Arzamendia starting to land, and then Brown landed two rights, and some punches on the ground, and it was over. But it was 2.5 minutes, but it was a great 2.5 minutes. Michael Graves and Bojan Velekovic, actually it's Velekovic. That's not how it's pronounced. There's a J in there. Even though there's no J in the spelling, there's a J in the pronunciation. But anyway, they went to a draw, and I had it as a draw. Graves won the second round. He pretty much dominated the first round. Velekovic won. It really could have gone either way. It was a boring first round. Second round, Graves got his back for most of the round. Got the takedown, got his back, working for a choke. Pretty much controlled the whole round. It was a 10-8 round, I thought, and two of the judges agreed. And then Velekovic took the third round. One judge actually gave Velekovic or gave Graves a 30-27. So he gave him all three rounds. I would not do that. The first round, almost so little happened. I mean, it was pretty much almost a 10-10 round, honestly. The second round was like a 10-8, and then the third round, I thought Velekovic won. But it was close. Like I said, I can't fault the judge who gave it 30-27. The other two have both had 20-28s. Wilson Hayes and Hector Sandoval. So Hector Sandoval is a guy from this area who's fought on small shows, and he's actually very good, but I don't, you know, he was in here with a you know, he's never fought at the UFC level, and I don't know if he just, you know, it just got to him fighting at the UFC, and Wilson Hayes was going to be challenging Demetrius Johnson for the championship on this card. So, you know, he's a great ground fighter, and he got the takedown, and Sandoval actually reversed to the top, but then Hayes took him down again, got his back, and choked him out very quickly, actually. It was one of the quickest flyweight submissions in history, I believe. Then Damian Grabowski and Anthony Hamilton, and this was just one of those things where one guy got the jump. Anthony Hamilton just came out, and he was swinging, and 14 seconds later, it was over. He just landed those punches and kept punching on the ground until it was over. It was the second fastest heavyweight finish in UFC history, behind only the Todd Duffy-Tim Haig fight in 2009. Yeah, just a quick knockout. Jorge Masvidal and Ross Pearson. I had Masvidal winning 29-27 with a 10-8 second round, which no judge gave the second round 10-8. And I don't see how, because Masvidal had him essentially he had him beat. But Pearson did survive and did somewhat come back at one point. But I thought that was a pretty darn one-sided round. But Masvidal, the third round, you know, I don't know. I don't know. The third round was close. I did go 29-27. A lot of people thought this was a 30-26 fight, and I would not disagree with that at all. 29-28, that's a tough score, because I just feel very difficult to not give a 10-8 second. Nikita Krylov and Ed Herman. Nikita Krylov won in the second round. He won the first round. He almost every Nikita Krylov fight ends in the first round, and he was definitely trying to keep that streak alive, especially late in the round. Krylov had him hurt. Herman was bleeding, but he couldn't finish him in the first. In the second round, he landed a spinning back fist, but Herman came back with some good punches, knee to the head, and then Krylov just landed a perfect head kick, just perfect, like classic, you know, Peter Arts kickboxing style or somebody like that, and Mirko Krokop type kick, and it was over 40 seconds into round two. So, you know, overall, good show. You know, we didn't get a lot of feedback on it. I don't expect that it did very big business. The little bit of bar response we got was that the places were empty. I mean, look, it was between two monster shows, and this was the one that, you could skip. It did not have a strong undercard, but, you know, I mean, look at last week's show. Last week's show, I thought the lineup wasn't good at all, and it did record ratings, or summer record ratings. I mean, it did great ratings. I don't anticipate that this did great on pay-per-view at all, but as far as an entertaining show, it was an entertaining show.
Alrighty, a couple of days ago, we were doing the mailbag, and somebody was asking about the UFC USADA testing, and if somebody fails a test and is suspended for 2 years, are they still, or however long, are they still tested in their downtime?
Yeah, so, I mean, whether they would be or... I mean, I think it depends on the person, but the point is that they can be tested constantly all the time unless they retire. So Brock Lesnar, you know, can be tested. Until Brock Lesnar says he's retired, they can show up at Brock's house anytime. I suspect Brock Lesnar will get tired of that and retire. Maybe not, though. Maybe not. John Jones... I would guess that John Jones is going to get tested all the time during his time off, however long that turns out to be. So yeah, they have the right to test you the entire time. If you're, you know, who was the guy? Ricardo Abreu just got suspended for 2 years. I would guess, you know, I shouldn't even say this because you just never know, but I would guess a guy like him, they wouldn't be as apt to test all the time as they would a John Jones. I mean, if you look at the testing and the frequency of testing, the bigger the star, generally they're going to test you more. That's just how it is. So if a minor guy fails, they probably, you know what? They probably will test him from time to time just because, you know, look, once you fail, you're going to be tested more than if you keep passing. I mean, that's just natural. But, you know, if you're a John Jones and you fail, I think they're going to be showing up all the time for you. So yeah, they can do that.
All right. Moving on to some professional wrestling. CMLL has announced the date for the anniversary show this year, but no matches yet. Unless they announced them tonight.
No, they're going to announce them on Wednesday. Most likely, or a Wednesday. They'll do a press conference. You know, La Máscara has really been focused on. He could work with Pierre Auth. He could work with Rush. He could work with Dragon Lee, you know, in some sort of match with his mask at stake, which is not going to sell out Arena Mexico by any means. I don't know what else that they would do right now. You know, there was Mystico just got injured on last night. So I don't know the severity of it. I guess we'll find that out. I was like looking forward. I didn't actually get to see the Arena Mexico show. I was looking forward to it, but I couldn't watch it. But the as it turned out, I guess it really wasn't a very good show because Mystico got hurt and the Dragon Lee and La Máscara match I heard wasn't good at all. So just nothing much of a show.
Same weekend as Battle of LA.
Yeah, it's Friday night of the Battle of LA. I know, that's crazy when I got my Battle of LA tickets because the anniversary show at Arena Mexico is like, that's like a can't-miss show usually most years. I mean, certainly the last 4 or 5 years, I mean, just been absolutely incredible. Of course, they don't have a match this year that's going to be like that. I mean, it was incredible because, you know, you had Atlantis and La Sombra, you had... the year before you had Atlantis Ultimo Guerrero, which was one of the greatest spectacles in wrestling that I have ever seen in my life. You know, that, but that's the one thing with the Arena Mexico anniversary, with the CMLL anniversary show thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I will see what the card is. I can't imagine how they can match the you know, La Máscara. It's just not that, you know, him putting up his mask just isn't nearly what, you know, La Sombra's mask or Volador's mask or Ultimo Guerrero and Atlantis's mask. You know, nothing of that level.
What days do you have tickets for?
I think I have tickets for all 3 days.
Really? You're going to go to all 3 days?
You know what? These tickets are not going to be very hard to unload if I don't want to go to a show.
Well, that is true.
I mean, there's only like 2,000 people who want like the 5 or 10 tickets that are going to be out there to be resold. But I will definitely go the first two nights and play it by ear. You know, I mean, there's so much, you know, going on, and it's hard for me to do an issue if I'm gone 3 days, but I guess...
He just did it recently, actually.
I just did it this week.
You,
I know.
Now you have no excuse for not leaving the whole weekend.
That's 3 straight days, though. That's hard. But I may. I mean, last year was tough, and I was, you know, I look, 2 straight nights of it. You see everyone. That's fine. We'll see how it goes. I'm not thinking that far in advance. I'm right now thinking, you know, I'm just trying to get through these G1s. I'm so far behind on G1, and then there's so much stuff going on. There are a couple other things. We talked about this on the show on Thursday, but I'll make it real quick again. So for Charlotte and Sasha, they're actually going to be rematched on the pay-per-view, and the whole deal there was just they wanted a champ. That match, the championship was supposed to change hands at SummerSlam. That was the plan for going back months. That Sasha Banks would win the title. You know, that whole time when Sasha wasn't hardly on TV at all and everyone was complaining, I go, look, I know what's going on and there's no point in complaining. I mean, I know it makes no sense that you want to get someone over by not putting them on TV. I know that doesn't make sense, but it did on this case, because I think if she was on TV every week doing 50-50, she wouldn't be nearly as over as she is. So it ended up working out for the best. But they just figured with the first show and everything like that of the new era, they just decided to move the title match up, and they gave them the time to have the pay-per-view match. They gave them 17 minutes, and they laid out their – that was the match that they were going to do at SummerSlam. They did the match. So now they're going to do a rematch at SummerSlam where they – who knows if they'll get 17 minutes. They may, just because SummerSlam, of course, is going to be – let me see. It will be a – 4.5-hour show. So, is that right? 3.5, 4.5? No.
It's starting an hour early, and there's probably going to be a pre-show. And
there'll be a pre-show, so probably 5.5-hour show.
5.5 hours, yeah.
Probably 5-hour show. Probably a 5-hour show. So 5-hour show, they probably will give them time, especially after the match. I know that from an office standpoint, the key people really loved that women's match. They thought that they really delivered. And, I mean, the second half of the match was just great. The first half, I didn't think the first half was great, but overall, when it was all said and done, you know, it was probably one of the two best women's championship matches. That and the Charlotte Natty match from Toronto were probably the two best women's matches in the last several months. I thought that the Charlotte and Sasha Banks match, well, I'm trying to think. The one that I saw in San Jose, I thought was smoother. It was smoother, and it was some ways better. But in the one in San Jose, it wasn't like they did the crazy dives and everything like that. So the one in Pittsburgh was more spectacular. But I guess they were both around the same level. So that's the deal there. But there's no time off. That's exactly what it was. It was just. You know, it was just a booking decision. And, you know, I mean, it made sense. I think you could argue, well, winning the title at SummerSlam would be big. But, you know, winning it here, on the nature of that show and everything, that was big, too. So it was just, you know, I don't think either decision, it would be a wrong decision at all.
So what's the story with Roderick Strong?
Yeah, real quick. Also, so Monday with Paul Heyman, I guess we're going to find out. I have not heard, put it this way, as of a couple of days ago, he had not signed. You know, he may have signed, and they may put him on TV, you know, without him signing. I mean, it's possible. They've done that stuff before, too. It's not like he's going to go to TNA. They need to worry about it. But, yeah, so we'll see if he's going to be on Raw on Monday. Right now, I don't know that he is. So Roderick Strong, it's pretty clear Roderick Strong is going to WWE on last night's PWG show. I mean, he already did this farewells at Ring of Honor. I mean, that pretty much tells you. But, well, I mean, I guess you could say he could have gone to TNA, and he probably did have offers there. But if he was at TNA, he wouldn't have to say farewell to PWG. The fact he was not in Battle of Los Angeles should have been the sign, because he's been one of the top guys in PWG. So he did his farewell last night in Battle of Los Angeles. He actually beat Timothy Thatcher. And then Zack Sabre retained the title over Kyle O'Reilly. And I heard that match was fantastic, which doesn't shock me at all, because there's very few people that have been as consistently great this year as Kyle O'Reilly, or Zack Sabre for that matter. And afterwards, Roderick Strong said he wanted his rematch, and they just came out. They did just basically a quick match just so he could come out, and then everyone at the end said their goodbyes after Zack Sabre beat him and tie up the loose ends, because Roderick Strong hadn't lost a rematch to Sabre yet. So, yeah, he's WWE bound, and, relatively soon, obviously, because if it wasn't going to be that soon, he'd be in Battle of Los Angeles.
Super J Cup, we've got a card for the finals. And I also want you to talk about the G1.
Okay, so this is the card for... So this is going to be a freaking crazy weekend. So that Friday will be... The Friday, August 19th, will be a pay-per-view... Ring of Honor pay-per-view from Las Vegas. Saturday will be the Super J Cup Finals. It's technically Sunday in Japan, but Saturday our time. It will be UFC 202, and it will be NXT TakeOver with a Samoa Joe Nakamura match, and the Dash and Dawson against Ciampa and Gargano match. And Dash and Dawson and Ciampa and Gargano wrestled three matches this weekend in San Antonio, outside of Corpus Christi, Robston, and in Houston tonight, and they were doing 4-star matches every night. They were, in fact, I heard the match tonight was way over 4 stars. They were just tearing it up. So that's going to be great. The Asuka and Bayley, which may be Bayley's last match in NXT, because her time is coming. She is coming to the main roster fairly soon. I don't know if there's an official date, but I kind of been here in September. But it'll probably be her last takeover. It will probably be her last takeover show. Maybe she'll do one more. I don't know. But they had a great match in Dallas. You know, in fact, that match I thought was actually hurt a little bit by the crowd. But it was a great worked match. I think in Brooklyn, I think that, of course, you know, the whole thing of Bayley going for the title in the same building that she won her title in. I think the crowd's going to be super hot for her. And I think that they will probably have a great match as well. And Austin Aries is Jose, No Way Jose. Yeah, I don't know. What are the other? I don't even remember what the other stuff is off the top of my head on that show. But anyway, there's that. Super J. So Super J Cup. There's going to be the tournament. So the matches in the next round are Jushin Liger against Taichi, which probably won't be that good. Kushida against Kenno, which will probably be great. Ryusuke Taguchi against Yoshinobu Kanemaru, which will probably be good. And Matt Sydal against Will Ospreay, which I guess we'll find out. Will Ospreay, I think, missed a match today, but he's got a big match tomorrow. But he's got a shoulder injury, so I don't know what's going on with him as far as injury goes. But if he's not on this show, that would be a big blow. Because I don't want to say a healthy Will Ospreay, because I don't even think he's been healthy for months because of his knee. But he's been tearing it. But Will Ospreay and Matt Sydal is just an incredible match. And then the semifinals and the finals as well. There's also David Finlay, Ita, who is Dragon Gate, and Yuma Aoyagi from All Japan, who was the one guy who looked kind of green in the first round of the J-Cup, will face Bushi, Kaji Tomato, who was really good in his first round match, and Gurukin Mask, who also was very good in his first round match. Then Volador Jr., Titan, and Caristico against Ultimo Guerrero, Gran Guerrero, and Euphoria. That match will be fantastic. GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title. So Noah's going to do a This is actually a NOAH match, which is Atsushi Kotogi and Daisuke Harada against ACH and Taichi Ishimori. So that was a match that was actually held earlier today, where ACH and Ishimori won the non-title match, and they won the tournament. So now they're getting the shot at the title, and this is the show. Then the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles, the Young Bucks against Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, the Motor City Machine Guns. So that's the show. It's a pretty damn, you know, and then, you know, the tournament going forward, if, you know, probably what, Ospreay and Taguchi, which may go to Taguchi, or it could be Kanemaru, I don't know. And Kushida, who knows? I don't know where they're going to go with the tournament, but that, you know, that junior tournament, you know, the semifinals and finals are going to be great for sure. So, and then SummerSlam, which, you know, SummerSlam will probably be a good show, but I don't know. I mean, the Ring of Honor show is going to be awfully good. They got Tanahashi, Okada, all those guys. Tanahashi and Naito actually challenging for the Ring of Honor Championship in a four-way. So, whatever it is, there's going to be some awesome wrestling that weekend, like there was this past weekend.
And any other G1 thoughts before we get going?
So G1, let me just see. So today, I saw most of the Nagoya show. Unfortunately, I didn't see the great matches. I heard that Nakajima and Yuji Nagata was great. Elgin and Kenny Omega and Shibata, which Michael Elgin won, which is kind of a surprise, I guess. And Katsuyori Shibata beat Naito, which I heard was really great as well. So that was today's stuff, and obviously the Gifu show is starting very shortly. So right now, the A block, as we speak, Makabe is 4-0, Okada is 3-1, and then at 2-2 are Ishii, Marufuji, Seiya Sanada, Goto, and Tenzan. Tanahashi and Ishii are fighting tonight, which will probably be incredible. The B block, after today's stuff, Nakajima, Nagata, both 3-1. Shibata, Naito, Elgin, Omega, Honma, Yoshihashi, all 2-2. So those are the leaders. So it's, going down. From what I've seen of G1, I mean, it's been the G1 matches are all pretty entertaining. The first night was great. The other stuff that I've seen, which isn't, you know, and again, I'm behind. It's like every match you watch and you go, this is pretty good. Good heat, you know, good, real good, exciting finishes and everything. But it's not like the previous years where you just go, oh my God, like these are just like 4.5-star matches here. And it's like, they're really, I haven't seen, other than the Tanahashi and Sanada match was really great. And Okada and Marufuji was the match of the tournament, I think, so far. That match was, you know, like the level of those matches. But it's just like, it's really good other than the, what was the match? Honma and Yano? Holy fuck, did that match suck. But the rest of the stuff has been, it's like, it's good. But it's not like I go, oh my God, you got to go out of your way to see it. Guys are hurting. You take AJ Styles, and you take Shinsuke Nakamura, and you take them out of the tournament, and you have Tanahashi hurt. You know, Tanahashi's like, you know, he's smart enough to get through it. He's not going to have bad matches, but I mean, he's hurting, so it's like there's kind of a limit to what he can do. So that's kind of where we're at. But I'm figuring, you know, by the last week, you know, when we get the Osaka show and then the three Tokyo Dome, Sumo Hall shows, I have a feeling those shows will all be great.
All right, let's do some of the questions here before the G1 gets started here. This was inspired, Fred says, by some questions Dave got on Twitter. Which would have worked out better for the WWE financially if Punk was added to the Cena versus Rock match at WrestleMania and was happy enough to stay an active member of the roster for another 5 years, or the Cena versus Rock path that they did take?
Well, I mean, I guess if you say that it would have kept Punk in the company, but who, you know, when you're booking, you know, you're not thinking, oh my God, if we don't put this guy in the main event, he's going to quit. So, you know, yeah, if I was going to keep him in the company, it probably would have been better to do a three-way. But at the time, I mean, when they were building it up, the first Rock and Cena match was the biggest grossing pro wrestling show of all time. And I know they billed it as once in a lifetime, but normally in the history of pro wrestling, when you have the biggest grossing match in the entire history of the business, the first thing that you think of when it's over is, let's do a rematch. So that's what they did, and that's what they felt was the money match at the time. And it was a bigger money match than Cena against Punk would have been by far. And it was a bigger money match than Rock and Punk would have been. Because Rock and Punk, you know, they headlined two pay-per-views, and they did well on both pay-per-views. But if you look at, like, the, you know, well compared to how – and I mean, again, WrestleMania is always going to do better. But the WrestleMania was still a pretty – way above normal WrestleMania, whereas the – the SummerSlam, I mean, the Rumble with Rock and Punk. I mean, it was better than a lot of Rumbles, but I mean, it was better than Rumbles for a couple of years, but it wasn't. I don't know. I mean, it did pretty well too, and I mean, and the promos were great. I can't take that away. The promos for Rock and Punk were great, but you know, Vince's idea at the time was that John Cena is the biggest star in the company, and The Rock's a bigger star than John Cena, and that's where they were going to go. So. But yeah, if you want to say hindsight, that if it would have kept Punk from quitting, yeah, I think Punk was going to quit either way, though. I think that he had it in his head that he wanted to do this. And that was, you know, if he didn't quit, he was never going to do it. So was that a smart move? I guess we'll see in September. Anything can happen in a fight, but man, I don't know. I don't like Punk's chances, put it that way.
This person says, what is the current break-even for a WWE house show? The last number I believe Dave reported a while back was $205,000. Is it the same or has it increased?
You mean $205,000?
Yes, the break-even.
I would have to... I got the information. I'd have to look it up and figure it out. But that... You know, it probably isn't much different than it was then. I mean, it's probably in that ballpark. And most of the shows are beating. I mean, the house shows right now are making money. The grosses are, I mean, the actual house. Okay, so the Raw shows are up. Man, some of that's been from playing bigger arenas. You know, they're booking Raw at more bigger arenas. Almost every, like you rarely, what there was Providence, I think, was like an 8,000, you know, I think they may have sold out with 8,000 people in Providence. But most of your Raws are your NBA arenas. And, you know, whereas the year, you know, in other years, you know, you book a lot of NBA arenas, but there was also smaller arenas. So Raw's up. House shows are down, but they're not, you know, they're down. Okay, you know, but they're not losing money. In fact, house shows were actually pretty profitable. Of course, that was this last quarter had the European tour. And the European tour, because there was a couple of bigger arenas that they played as well, you know, the European tour was the, money-wise, was the most successful European tour they've ever had. And, of course, you had the Mania, which is amazing. I mean, God, 18,000 free tickets?
Well, that's what they claim.
Well, that's what it is.
It's a lot of free tickets. They open the door at 4 p.m.?
You know, I mean, they had, what was it? There was like, I'm trying to remember the day when I got, it's like the Monday before, it was like 86,000. So they're, you know, so there was 11,000, almost 12,000 more people the last week, but I don't think those were all freebies. Because there were plenty of people willing to pay. I mean, that was a lot. I mean, is that the most? I'm trying to think about this. Let me think. There have been 15,000s at some 15,000 free tickets at some WrestleManias. The San Jose was 58, was like 9,000 free tickets. That's a lot of free tickets. I was surprised. Like, I thought the paid was going to be, you know, somewhere between 85 and 90, but it was not, you know, yeah, it was about in the high 70s most likely. We don't know the exact number. It could have been as high as almost like an 80 in the 84s, but most likely it was 79. But yeah, lots of free tickets there. Something else as far as the so anyway, I guess we'll talk about this in the so they when they do the profit loss stuff for WrestleMania, and they actually I believe had WrestleMania as $200,000 profit for WrestleMania, not WrestleMania, WrestleMania week. You know, that would be the combined profit of Hall of Fame, NXT, Fan Access, and WrestleMania. The profit was $200,000, which sounds absolutely ridiculously low. But the way that they do it, they don't figure in the network. They do figure in pay-per-views. They do figure in all the ticket sales and all that. And the production, I mean, they spent $21.5 million just on WrestleMania alone. That's not even including the Hall of Fame and everything else. So the profit margin was low. But they don't figure in like the increased network subscribers. But I did figure, you know, the gain of network subscribers, and you know, even though you had, I guess the NXT show was bigger in the sense it played in a bigger arena. There were a lot more people at the NXT because the San Jose building they were in was, you know, it's not that big of a building. It was about, what was it, about 5,500 people, I think, in that building, but. All the shows and everything of that week and in the Fan Access and everything and all those people in Texas, the Santa Clara show was actually considerably more profitable overall than the Dallas show, which surprised me. They both made money. I mean, if you really – the real money – let me see if I even have this here. The real money as far as if you factor in – what do we got? There was probably $8 million in profits this year at WrestleMania, really. But last year it was like 12, which has to do with they sold... They made a lot more there were a lot more new network subscribers last year without the free week than there was this year with the free week. It's actually a pretty huge difference, actually. So that's not to say, you know, last year was the first was last year the first WrestleMania that was on the network, or was it the second? It was the first one, right?
Last year was the
first one.
First. Right. I think so.
Or no.
It seems like it's been a long time.
No, because they started the network with WrestleMania. They basically started with WrestleMania, so it's the second one. But the point is that the they were just getting started the first year. Then last year was like the semi-mature, but it was the first one for most of the foreign country. Every foreign country was the first WrestleMania. It was the Santa Clara WrestleMania. So this year was the second year foreign and the third one in the United States. So you're not going to get the same amount of gain because so many of the people who are going to get it are already subscribers to begin with. So I can't go and say, well, the free thing didn't work for WrestleMania, because you and I would talk, is the free thing going to work? And I mean, if you use the numbers, the answer would be no, it did not work. But we can't fully isolate and say, well, if they didn't do it, would they have grown as much as the year before? Probably not. But the idea, you know, and also the pay-per-view was way, way down. Network subscribers were up. But I mean, but as far as overall profitability of WrestleMania, the Santa Clara one was more profitable, even though there was a ton more people in Dallas, and the gross in the building was a lot larger because, 79,000 tickets it was still $17 million. And the San Jose one was only, 59,000 tickets. And that was about, 12 million dollars, something like that. So it was, but, you know, just overall expenses and everything like that of everything that they did, they made more money last year.
All right, everybody. On that note, we're going to wrap it up, but we've got a lot of stuff coming up over the next couple of days, so make sure you check out the front page. We are undergoing an upgrade on the back end. And so some of you may have had some problems logging in. If you did, make sure you go to the front page and do a help desk ticket. We will get it fixed as soon as possible. And hopefully everything will be cleared up by the end of today. So that is the update on that. And thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you again after a while.